The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime World Daily. We've got a lot to talk about today. I don't know what the correct order of events is for today's show, but we'll figure it out. I'm James Sharman, Amy Walsh, Craig Forrest, Dan Wong, Jimmy Brennan, Jeff Cole. We're all here. Okay, I'm not gonna give FIFA or Trump or Infantino too much of today's show. So we won't start with that because there's way more important things to talk about than that. Gong show regarding Flo Balogun. So we'll get to the Canada stuff in depth, I promise you, dear listener. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Arash Madani, who's got some takes of which I don't agree with. So we'll get into some of that. Let's start with recency bias and yesterday what happened at the World Cup. How about that? That sound good?
Yes. I've
got two more buttes today, by the way. But what happened yesterday, the most recent one was England, Mexico, at the Azteca, 85,000 fans, fervent. It's delayed. There's thunderstorms. I mean, what a classic of a football match. I didn't enjoy. No, that's not true. I enjoyed about 2 minutes of it, Craig. Overall, 2 minutes, because I enjoyed the two goals by England in the first half. Before that, I wasn't enjoying it. After that, I certainly wasn't enjoying it. Maybe a little bit, maybe an extra 30 seconds with the Kane penalty, but didn't last very long. So in the end, Craig, they found a way to muscle through being down a man for what, half an hour, 40 minutes, whatever it was, in those conditions, just being bombarded, old school English football, big old center backs heading the ball out from the area. What a match, what a performance.
Yeah, it was. It brought back memories of watching and being part of teams that have been in that sort of desperate mode where you're just trying to hang on. You can't feel your legs. Your mind goes absolutely dead. And I've never seen England in a position like that. I mean, we know Mexico are a good side, but if you put them on neutral territory, I think it's completely different. But there's something about that Azteca where the Mexicans become superheroes and then everybody else can't even hardly breathe. I mean, Bellingham near the end of the game, there was shots of him. And I mean, he had his mouth open as wide as he could. And he was just gasping for air, but you're right. Yeah. They bring on these big center backs, Burns 6'7" or something like that. He's just hitting everything, clearing everything, and nothing ever dropped for Mexico in the end. But I fear that if Mexico got equalizing goal, that they would have gone on to win that.
I don't think, Jimmy, that England could have stood for an extra time. They wouldn't have made it physically.
No.
They were done.
Yeah, you could see, like Stax was saying, their mouths are wide open, just trying to suck in the air. I didn't understand. The Mexicans just kept on putting the ball into the box. And I'm like, there is absolute giants in there. You guys are not getting on the end of any of these. Mm-hmm. And they kept on doing it, but you're right. I think if they went into extra time, I think it would have been game over for England, because towards the end, they were struggling. And we all know exactly what that feeling is like when you're trying to breathe and you just can't get your wind. It's a terrible feeling. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, the English, they held on. Bellingham, I thought, was an absolute monster last night. He was brilliant. Wow, what a performance.
Mm-hmm. Gordon was great, too.
Yeah, he really was. Princess Di showed up when it counted. Did you think, though, that Mexico in like those last 20 minutes, they're a player up, they've made the substitutions plural, but you take somebody like Quiñones off, who can really run in behind, is really powerful, kind of unrelenting, doesn't have the space to do it. But then the lack of creativity and their ability to not find solutions, and they keep like whipping balls in and just landing on the head of Dan Byrne. Like it just was perplexing to me that you've got to player up. You have to do a little bit more than that. So I think you saw it in the way that they performed, that like the mental kind of energy was gone because they were unable to do anything different. They just kept whipping in balls over and over and over again.
Yeah, which it surprised me. Yeah. It surprised me because that's not real. It's not really the Mexican way, is it? Just whipping balls into the box. And most times they know what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. And they're not the team that whips in balls and getting on the big headers. Yeah, you got Raul Jimenez up top, but apart from him, who else is getting on the end of these crosses when you got absolute giants in the box? Normally they're trying to cut through teams and play through teams and look for little 1-2s on the edge of the box and get their shots in. But it was just pure panic mode towards the end, wasn't it? It's just throw everything in there, hope to God we get something.
I must admit, I was a bit surprised that, I know they were down a man, but Tuchel went so deep so early after being, you know, seeing Kwanzaa sent off, which, by the way, was a red card for those, anyone arguing.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that one.
Jesus, yeah. It's a bit like the penalties, so you really can't really argue against them, I don't think. Maybe the Kane a little bit, but not really. But yeah, are you surprised, Dubs, they went into that shell so early, or was it Tuchel thinking, you know what, these guys haven't shown too much football so far, they might go direct and we can handle that?
Yeah, I think it was smart. And I think you saw a guy like Byrne, who hadn't played a minute up until that point, is obviously a big physical specimen, and he's there to defend the box. I thought Pickford was outstanding as well, but I think it was really good game management by Tuchel, you know, in the substitutions that he used. And I was surprised to see Spence, that's difficult to say, given that he was basically ruled out for this contest, and he did very well, looked, you know, like he was combative and he was getting stuck in and leaving it all out there. But no, I think that he did very well in managing the game, first and foremost, the game state, inserting different players that were going to play a role, and seeing it out. And I mean, obviously there was a plan, but you don't plan for what happened in front of you, because I think that this is one of these matches, not to move away too much from what you asked me, Sharms, but these are one of these games, and maybe, you know, Canada and their run and the Eustachio goal versus South Africa to get their first ever knockout win, you remember where you were. And I think the match at the Azteca, given how storied it was and how formidable Mexico is within the confines of that stadium, and what England showed up and did on the night against all odds, and the adversity that was thrown at them, the resiliency of the performance and the quality within it, like, it's going to be one of these reference points for English football, but I think it's going to be talked about like one of the great matches of a World Cup.
And then they'll lose to Norway.
No, don't listen to the dark passenger on your shoulder.
Well, listen, Norway, look, I tell you what, Norway, I mean, they're a proper team, aren't they? A lot of people had them as dark horses in this tournament. I think some of those smart people, some of whom on this podcast, also said that Brazil weren't that great ahead of this World Cup. And both things came to pass. Erling Haaland's fame brand just continues to grow, so likable, just pops up when he has to. Is he even on the pitch? Oh yeah, he scored 2 goals. There you go, just beat Brazil to World Cup last 16 match. Jimmy, just fantastic once again. And Norway, England now in Miami, a hotbed for Norwegians. I have no idea how to try that. I don't know.
They're all by the docks.
Yeah, yeah, they're rowing in. They're arriving right now.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
What do you think about that one? We'll get into it more close to the time, but I mean, that's an exciting match, actually. I mean, it's not Brazil. Brazil.
I thought it was brilliant. I mean, we said it. We said Norway, you got to watch out for these guys. They're a quality side. They're clicking at the right time. Even in qualifying, when you watch them, they can score goals. Their work rate, how they play. I thought the game management for me was absolutely perfect. Just they controlled the tempo throughout the match. There was times where they just got it, just kept it. Made the Brazilians work. The Brazilians were thinking, okay, are they coming at us? Do we go press them? And I think the Brazilians, they ran out of ideas. And I just love the way that Norway play and dictated the match. And Holland, when he just, like, the second goal was brilliant for me because it was kind of one of them just like on the training ground, you know, when the manager goes, okay, you got 10 minutes on your own and you just grab a ball and you just have a couple of strikes. And the way he just gets it, looks up, just hits it, scores, doesn't even celebrate, just has a little look around. Like, yeah, how easy was that, by the way? I thought it was amazing. What a great, great game from Norway. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go to the semis, to be honest with you. Craig, would not be surprised.
I just want to mention one thing, Craig. One advantage England does have ahead of the Norway match, they haven't got Vikings, they have got a Muppet up front for them. If you could play the clip of Harry Kane, please, for Craig's benefit here, and get his reaction.
I think it says it all the fact that your voice is gone. That was some contest to watch. What on earth was it like to play in?
Yeah, it was a crazy game. We had to fight. We had to fight in something. I've just been sitting there. I can't really talk, but... all the occasion, the team, everything against us, we found a way.
I was going to say, is that what pleases you the most, the resilience today? Because even your penalty, a word on that as well, not the one you scored, the one you conceded. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I thought I got to the ball first. It was one of those days that the ref gave a lot against us.
All right, let's wrap it. That's I love it.
The rainbow connection. Craig, lovers.
It's arguably an upgrade on his usual voice.
Yeah. Craig, you played there, Craig. You're yelling at your teammates a lot during your matches in Yesterday, I'm sure. Did you ever get the Harry Kane voice?
Yeah, I think I did. And a few others. And that was at halftime. I remember we were World Cup qualifying, we were 0-0 at halftime and going around the dressing room and like trying to, all right, if we can just dig deep here, we might get a result. And everybody's frothing at the mouth and speaking like a Muppet.
It's like, true.
We're in trouble.
Forrest, Shrums, I don't want to take us too far off where we're headed, but Forrest, after you play at the Azteca, like you're dealing with the altitude, you said you're like foaming at the mouth. Like, what is the recovery like? Like, what will it be like for England in the next couple of days as they prepare for Norway?
Yeah, well, even Tuchel mentioned, I think they're going to have like 2 days off. They need to absolutely do nothing and regroup. And I mean, their philosophy was to go into pretty late into Mexico City. So you hear all sorts of different game plans. And we tried everything. We went in last minute. We went in a week before. We went in 10 days before. We decided that, oh, we can ease ourselves in by playing golf for 4 days because you don't want to exert yourself too much. That was a philosophy that didn't work either. So, you know, it's difficult to know what's best, but they went in late, and I mean, you can see they're affected by it. There's no doubt about that, but it's going to take a few days for sure before they can do anything, but they got some time.
Yeah, they probably got out there real quick as well.
Mm.
Yeah. As soon as the game's the next morning, get out.
Yeah.
Listen, I know Craig's got to leave soon, so I want to jump to some Canada very quickly with Craig before Arash joins us because I want to get Craig's perspective. The postmortem will continue throughout the week on Footy Prime. There's so much to get to, including what's next. Kevin Blue's talking today, actually, to the media, I think around 1 o'clock. So we'll hear from Kevin Blue today, and then we'll address his comments tomorrow. Craig, but listen.
Wait, 1 sec. Throw it in to JC.
It's the World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim's.
Craig, so it came to an end. It wasn't a crashing end. They went out on their sword, I think it's fair to say. There's a lot of opinions out there about various things, which we're going to get to a lot over the coming days. Most of them are wrong, but everyone's allowed their opinion. Let's just say that. But overall, Craig, your thoughts on how they went out and the tournament as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing the way they went out, only because they had so much of the play. And you look at the first 12, 15 minutes of that match, and you're like, well, you got to take those chances. You got them under some pressure. You got to put the ball in the net. And we felt that, you know, Morocco was going to be better second half. They couldn't be much worse than they were in the first half. And then they get their first real look at goal and score. And that was deflating, and that puts Canada on the heels a bit, obviously, and they have to start chasing the game. And then the second one came, and it was like they've had two chances, and they scored them both. So, you know, look at what Norway have done, and with a forward like that. And I think if we had Haaland, we might be finding ourselves in the semifinals, to be honest with you. I think we're that good for most of that game. But we just lacked finish, and it's been a theme. I mean, you go back to the World Cup in 2022, Canada against Belgium played really well, missed a penalty to go one up, you know, had chances in that. You end up losing the other matches, Morocco, especially another one in that they played fairly well, had chances, didn't score, couldn't score. It's a theme for us, unfortunately, that we were so good in open play, and except for the final third, the final pass, the finish that is just lacking. And that's what we've seen with the big team so far, is that the stars have showed up and then put the ball in the net. And unfortunately, that's all the statistics doesn't mean a damn thing, whether your HG goals, possession, crosses, all that, none of it matters except put it in the net.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I'm over all that XG, PGs, XRs.
NC-17.
Yeah. So anyway, disappointing. I mean, we just struggled because at the end of the day, we beat we drew a 64-ranked team. We beat a 57-ranked team and a 60-ranked team. So you could say that, yeah, we're happy that they got the round of 16, but we got a favorable draw, and we beat who we should, and people will say we lost to who we should. So that's disappointing, because I thought we could have actually rolled over a top 10 team.
Did you really think you could roll over a top 10 team, honestly?
Do you think we could have?
Yeah.
Other than the finish, yeah, I think
that's so. Pretty important, though, the finish.
That's pretty important, yeah. Yeah,
you know.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, obviously, this whole idea that Canada, well, they got the seeded berth in the group phase. They had this relatively easy path. I just don't buy it. Like, we're Canada. We haven't got an easy path. There is not an easy path for Canada at a World Cup at this point. Maybe next World Cup.
Sorry, what don't you buy, Sharms?
That Canada has an easy path at a World Cup when it's Canada. Great progress since 4 years ago in the last 6-7 years, mm-hmm. Admittedly, great progress, but we are 30th in the world. We're not top 15.
Yeah,
we're a team that has some really good players, not great players, not playing in top leagues. Very few of them. When our two potentially great players in Alphonso Davies isn't playing, and the other one, John David, had an off World Cup, didn't play well outside one match. I think it's fair to say, and if we're going to be respected as becoming a football nation, we've got to call out the negatives too, right? And to me, John David, we said before, if they're going to go far in this tournament, he has to score the goals. Three against Qatar, I'm sorry, isn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And nor is it either to say that all of the work he does off the ball is magnificent. It is. he's a really clever footballer and he puts in a shift and he does what's asked of him to play like a deeper position, but he's a striker and arguably our talisman. So you'll be judged by how many goals that you score and showing up in big moments. And he didn't do that. And to your point, Sharms, I'm of two minds. Like, I think I agree with Forrest that if we were able to convert, we were able to be more ruthless. We showed up, we had a killer instinct and we had somebody who was just money, just box office and good finish. Then it would be a different game because if Canada gets one in that first 45 minutes, it does change the game. But I also see what you're saying, that we're Canada. We'd never gotten a point before. We'd never gotten a win. All of the historic things that they accomplished. Yes, feel happy, feel pleased that they were able to accomplish what they did. But I think we're also at a point, ranked 30th in the world, where we need to hold them to a standard to say, you beat all of the teams that Forrest listed off that are ranked below you. You're expected to win. And you did that. And sometimes against it, like up against it, where you had to show up in the Kyle Larin goal to get the tie or the draw versus Bosnia and the Stefan Eustachio 90+2. You had to call on certain players to show up and to do it, but you still delivered. So I think there's something to be said for that. You can do both. You can celebrate it, but you can also hold them to account, certain individuals, but also the team, that we're expected to do those things at this point, even despite the players we were missing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that I'm a little disappointed because I think that the sum of our parts are greater. So a lot of the team or the players aren't playing in the best leagues in the world. But this team collectively, I thought were good enough to push it and get a result against a team like Morocco. That's where I'm at with it. I don't forget about the Canada thing, put all the history aside. This team, I think, could have done it. And I think they proved it to a point. Just the scoreline was very flattering, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It wasn't a 3-0 game. Craig, I know you need to leave very shortly. Is now a good time to leave or do you want to stick on?
Yeah, no, I pop out. I'll try to pop back in too if I'm finished my
Oh, wow. Now we're hey. Talking about finishing in the box.
That's it. In and out.
Hey, now. Let's bring then. See you, Craig. We'll see you shortly, hopefully. We'll see. But yeah, okay. Take your time. All right. Let's bring on now Arash Madani. Arash, we'll get to very shortly because we have some opinions about Arash. Some of his
about Arash. Can I also say, while we were talking about, I was just going back to what we were talking about, the stars have showed out for all the other teams. John David is our talisman for scoring goals, but our stars were not able to turn out. And that's where I kind of go, how happy am I with our round of 16 versus where we could have been, especially considering, you know, we keep remembering Flores didn't get a chance. Mm-hmm. Kone didn't get a chance to show his stuff the whole time. And Alphonso Davies didn't get a chance. And then Derek Cornelius comes up with a slight injury. Like we were, and I'm not making excuses. My point is some of our stars were never going to have a chance to be that guy. And when you don't, and we saw the Alphonso Davies effect in that small little window he had against South Africa, which, you know, all of a sudden gave Eustachio and Schaffelberg and, you know, could have given a John David and a space that he didn't get the rest of the tournament. So I just want to put this in perspective to going back to Sharon's point. I'm just happy we got to 16. And when you look at the teams that didn't get there, and you're like sitting there going, oh, sorry, Sharms, are you about to say something too?
No, finish up.
I just want to say, look, there's a level of I'm into this sport because of the development and seeing it grow. And I think if I'm going to look back and say, how did we do? They've grown the sport. The women are going to have another chance in 2027 to move the needle, but the men moved the needle this year. And, you know, every Olympics, every World Cup, every what we were talking about last year, when do I feel like we've made a real difference, is when the Gold Cup or when a CONCACAF, you know, like all of these things around, or a Copa that we're invited to, when those move the dial in a non World Cup year or a non Olympic year. So
yeah, and Jimmy, go ahead.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Charms, I can't hear you.
Oh, really?
No.
I'll jump.
I think
jump
when
out.
Remember when one leaves and comes in, yeah, they have to jump back in. But just quickly,
we love the system.
You know, with Jonathan David, yeah, we're talking about him saying that he hasn't produced. Now, when you watch him at Lille, he played a different role. When you watch him at Juventus, it's a different role, right? He's in and around the box. He gets the opportunities. He scores goals. That's what he does, especially at Lille. Played as a proper nine. So the way that he plays for Canada is completely different than what he did at Lille or at Juventus. So is it on us that we didn't put him in a position where he could be successful? You're asking him to do more of a defensive side than what you are on offensive side, where it's steady in and around the box. We're going to get you the ball. We're asking him to do all the other stuff, all the dirty work. And I think maybe we didn't do him a proper service. And that's why everybody's, well, Jonathan David, you didn't score. You didn't produce. Well, he's playing a different role than what he should be playing.
It's a really great point.
Yes, it's a very good point, and I do agree with that, that we're not setting him up for success. But I also think you look at opportunities, you know, that one that was a sitter versus Bosnia, that's just, you know, 13 yards out. Normally he would bury that. A couple of other opportunities in other matches. Obviously the way that he lit up versus Qatar, I think, is almost in isolation and in stark contrast to the way that we saw him perform versus better opposition. That half chance, which to me is a little bit more than a half chance, versus Morocco, where, you know, he lunges forward, much like the one versus South Africa, where you think, dive into it, like just go a little bit more. Like his awareness, his timing just seemed off. So that one that comes across him and just kind of skips in front of him, and then he gets a hold of it with his left foot almost when he's at the byline, and Bono gets a hand to it. He just didn't look like himself. So I think despite the fact that he's not in his ideal position to have success, he lends Canada other things. But again, back to my earlier point, as a striker, you will be judged by the amount of goals that you contribute and your conversion rate. And so he had opportunities to score to maybe double what he was able to produce, his output in this tournament, which was three goals. He maybe had three more that he left on the table.
Arash, are we desperately trying to find excuses here for John David, or do great players find a role regardless of where they're played on the team?
I would say the latter. And I agree totally with Amy's point about the Bosnia opportunity. I wondered if in the aftermath of Qatar, would that have just unlocked something? Would that have kind of just allowed him to play a little more free, et cetera? But, and I've heard, you know, the service wasn't there for him, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, A, he has to execute. B, I didn't understand the obsession of having Tanny up there with him over and over again. Like, I thought when Jonathan David was at his best, and granted it's against Qatar, is when Laren was right up there with him. Laren was the one who was creating opportunities. Laren was the engine of this thing. He brought firepower to this thing. There were some decisions in the starting 11. There were decisions and substitutions that I did not understand throughout this tournament. And, you know, and I get it. Coming off the bench, it's a different deal, but Promise David and Kyle Laren brought instant offense and instant spark whenever they stepped on the pitch. And it felt like they were trying to hold them back from getting onto the pitch.
Yeah, it's a valid point. I mean, the Promise thing, I think if we look back in this World Cup and all the injuries really, but Promise, had he been healthy and finished up the season at Union Saint-Gilloise the way he was playing when he got injured, I think he probably would have started, Jimmy. Is it fair to say, alongside John David, in which case you got a very different engine up top than Tanny, who, like, listen, he probably hates hearing this, but he works so hard, and he does, and he's very mobile, unlike the other strikers, but he's not a goal scorer. Kyle Laren, you know, has his moments. Not a
which Tanny scorer. Showed charms. Tanny showed against Morocco he's not a goal scorer.
Yeah. Yeah, had that chance. Great turn. Does everything, yep. Except for the finish, right? Although it was a great save, in fairness, as well. Do you think Promise would have been the solution to those ills? Is he that goal scorer they were missing?
Yeah, he's a prolific goal scorer. We know that. Every time he comes on, he causes havoc. He scores goals. But he just doesn't fit the way that Jesse wants to play. Now, in my opinion, at the end of the day, this game is about putting the ball in the back of the net. And if you got someone that can do it, start him. I don't give a shit if he can't press. Get him the ball. He's going to win you the game. Now, it's nice going, sorry, guys, put that down, whatever number that is. But,
noted, marked.
But, you know, it's great that you got a guy that can press and chase down the back line and do all the dirty work. But when you win the ball, if there's no production after that, then what's the point? So scrap that idea and figure out a way how you're going to get the ball in the back of the net and score a goal. Which, in my opinion, would have been promised David. Because it doesn't matter what time of the game, where he is on the park. If you find him in that 18-yard box, he's scoring a goal. Because he's that big body. He's the presence. He's like I'm going to say like a Haaland, you know, just that physique, that frame. Yeah. I mean, not as prolific as Haaland.
We're not comparing them.
Jimmy right. Brennan but, compares promised David to Erling Haaland.
No, I'm definitely not. Definitely not.
But he also brings the swag, Jimmy. Like there's no lack of confidence with promised David either.
No, mm-hmm. Of course. And you need that. And I like that. And I think all strikers, I mean, the strikers that I grew up playing with and in England, they were all like that. They had that little bit of swagger, that little bit about them. But that's what they need in order to be productive. And Promise Davis, he has that. Mm-hmm. And I think he should have played more. I'd rather have a goal scorer on the pitch than a guy that's going to work hard and win us the ball, but then not be productive.
Amen. Amen. Yeah.
I think the absence of Marcelo Flores, too, though, was huge in the end. Mm-hmm. I know we haven't seen much of Marcelo Flores, but what he can unlock defenses that no one else can do.
Yes.
He may have been that little guy playing in a number 10 type role, and that may have meant John Davis playing further up the pitch. So I know, Dubs, we can say, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but the injuries, they were a big deal. And the fact they got to the round of 16 and went down fighting against Morocco despite these injuries, I think is a huge, huge vote of confidence moving forward.
Yes.
There's depth here that we didn't know was there.
Yeah, it is. I just want to touch on Jimmy and Arash's point. Like, I think even if Promise David was able to give us more, I think his managed minutes, his ceiling was probably half an hour because we really didn't see him for longer than that. I think we would be sitting here talking about, or if he was fully healthy, I'm not convinced that Jesse Marsh would have started him. I think it still would have been Tanny, we're down the back line, and then Promise comes in for a little bit more time. And then we'd be pulling our hair out about that, right? But yeah, to your point, and Flores as well, like maybe he's the guy eventually as he matures, he grows into a role. Maybe we see him more under Jesse Marsh, but I think he would have been used off the left wing, maybe inverted, maybe on the right wing for Tejon. But I mean, I thought Ali Ahmed was tremendous against Morocco. And I thought maybe Liam Miller was going to get the shout there. There's some loud breathing going on. Is everybody else hearing that too?
John Helms here. Somewhere.
It was Sean Helms.
It's like 2010.
That's a deep. That's a deep cut. That's 2010. Oh, yeah. World Cup South Africa. Brilliant commentator, but he had some breathing issues.
Oh, I thought you said John Holmes.
Going back and finishing in the box.
Yeah, there we go.
Or anywhere, really.
Yeah.
Or anywhere.
Come full circle.
Who is the HR department at Footy Prime Incorporated? Because Amy's got some grievances.
That's her.
Oh, she's
no,
the HR department.
I instigate more than I file a complaint. It should be noted. Yeah, so I don't know if we would have seen him there. I think we would have seen him, you know, off the left wing, similar to what we saw Ali Ahmed do. But Ali Ahmed, the way that he's come along and what he can provide against the ball, like Ali Ahmed, we saw him just let loose and unleashed at Norwich City. Like that kid's ceiling is really high, and that also bodes well for the future. But to your point, Sharms, about the injuries, maybe it's making excuses, but we never saw Davies for more than 15 minutes. If he's healthy, maybe things change. Bambito was not fully fit. Alfie Jones, enigma, mystery. He's on the roster, but we never see him. He's got the ankle injury, then a muscle injury. Flores, we mentioned, promised David, not fully fit. And of course, maybe the biggest one, arguably, is the loss of Ismail Kone versus Qatar and how that affected the midfield. Even though Nico Segur was outstanding, I thought, against Morocco, and we had shouts for him to be part of that 11. I was glad that he featured more than just the cameo versus South Africa. And I thought Nathan Saliba and his instant response and lifting of the jersey will be a moment that we will remember from this World Cup.
Yeah.
Do you think after this tournament, And you always hear, you know, speculation of players that have a good tournament end up getting big moves. Do you think anybody from this Canadian side will get a big move?
Yeah.
There were rumors about Saliba, right?
To Man United.
Yeah. He denied them. I asked him about them. And he denied them. Oh, no, I'm just focusing on the World Cup. But then he smiled.
So what else is he going to say, Sharms?
Yeah. I know, right?
Don't mess with my negotiations, Sharms.
Yeah.
Nico Segura was linked with West Ham in January. Now, that was probably dodging a bullet in the end. But I think he's ready for a move from Hajduk Split.
And he looked great.
We didn't see a ton of him, but he was great. And I wonder, you know, as far as moving forward, does Jesse Marsh find a way to get Segura in the midfield with Kone and Eustachio? You know, do you mix things up? Is 4-4-2 a thing of the past? I wonder. Yeah. Arash, we mentioned flippantly there, Tejan Buchanan, who did not have a good World Cup. I think many people thought he could be one of the standout performers and had been for the last year or so. Him and Richie Larea, for me, have been the best players of Canada the last year. He just wasn't the same Tejan. He wasn't as aggressive, as tenacious. And in the end, I don't think there were any passengers per se on this team at all, but he wasn't the Tejan that we'd hoped to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I fully agree. He just never had it. And I don't think he was a passenger at all. I mean, Amy and Jimmy, you can speak further to that. Like, it was just like execution flaw after execution flaw, and it almost seemed like he just wasn't there mentally or something. Like, he just never got it going. He never got it together. Mm-hmm. He had ongoing votes of confidence from the coaching staff. I believe he started every game, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he didn't come off the bench once.
Yeah.
And it just empty. You know, failure to launch at every turn, it felt.
Was he targeted, Jimmy, by the opponents? That was considered, that wing was a danger area. Is that part of the reason?
Look, for me, Tejan's at his best when you get him the ball right away and he knocks it past that fullback and he gets in behind and then his confidence soars. And then it's like, okay, I can beat you. And we've seen it, but when he doesn't test that fullback and get past him, it seems like his confidence kind of drops a little bit. And I don't think he tested fullbacks the way that he should have. I really don't. I think as soon as you get it, knock it, go. And the minute you show that you got your pace and you can beat this fullback, that's how wingers end up growing into a game. And I think the fullbacks realized that. And they got really, really tight to him. And we saw it against Switzerland as well, where he was struggling. Now you're playing against a great left back, but you've got to figure out ways how to beat your man. And it's a cat and mouse. And you have to outthink the player that you're playing against. And I don't think that times he outthought his fullback, meaning that you can't just go down the line. Okay, now I got to come inside. Now I got to pull him out of position to get in behind. And I don't think he was too calculated at times with the way that he was playing, and it showed.
I think he looked like he was in his head a lot, like overanalyzing, overthinking what he needed to bring. And then he was frustrated immediately. Maybe the opponents had his number a little bit. They were targeting him. They want to keep him from probing too deep, creating depth for Canada in those little pockets of space. You know, whether it's Alistair Johnston or somebody else, like moving into that space to create the overloads. But I felt like when he didn't get going immediately, he was trying to go over to try to win a foul. And then I think that took him off his game further, where you saw him, I don't want to say he was diving, but there was something soft about the way that he was expressing himself on the pitch. And the, you know, the famous Steve Nash speech to this team, recorded or otherwise, the tension versus the freedom. I think you saw a guy that looked like he was wound too tight versus expressing himself fully.
Yeah.
Do you think this World Cup allows Jesse Marsh? Because in the past, it's like you always start Tejan, you always start John David. These guys were already sharpied in. There are sharpies. Remember we did our sharpies pencil shows? They were sharpied in, no doubt. Do you think, Arash, this World Cup allows Jesse Marsh, when they resume action, be it Nations League, be it Gold Cups, whatever it is, friendlies, doesn't matter. He now has kind of a blank slate. Okay, I can now try some stuff. No one has told me that they are a Sharpie player in that 11.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, after the group stages should have been water-soluble markers. I think they should have gone to a Staples and
whiteboard,
gotten some new ink.
Yeah.
Because once you start playing for keeps, it's an altogether different deal. So, yeah, I mean, so I think, yes, the answer to your question is yes, Charms. I thought they should have done it 10 days ago. But why not? Why not experiment with some things now in the lead up to qualification really starting? To find out what you have and who works well with who. I think, honestly, that's a must that you need to do because you have, whatever it is, 2.5 years to figure it out before qualifying starts.
That'd be a good show at some point. We'll do soon. What should Jesse Marsh's next 11 be? health pending. Health pending. Okay, Arash, let's get to it, shall we? Alfonso Davies. There's been a lot of hot takes out there. I'm not saying you had a hot take. You had more of a thoughtful take, but there's a lot of hot takes, people that really need to take a breath. What was your take on the Alfonso situation in general, leading up to and including what we saw or didn't see on Saturday?
Well, I think there's a couple of things interesting here. One, Jesse Marsh, up until post-game of elimination, defended, deflected, lied for Alfonso the entire time. And then the moment they got eliminated, threw him under the bus by saying the MRI came back clean. Because at that point, in saying this was Alfonso's decision, he fully put all of the blame on the player. There was no decoy. There was no whatever. So if the MRI came back clean, Alfonso made a business decision. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. But if that's your decision that you're not going to play, then what are you doing with the armband? Like Eustaquio laid it all out there the entire tournament. And even when he wasn't right, yes, he didn't start, but he came off the bench, et cetera, et cetera. Like if Alfonso wasn't going to be ready to play on July the 4th, I don't believe that to be true when they went to camp. I don't believe that to be true during the group stage. But to me, that dude made a decision either the day before the match, 2 days before the match, whenever it was. And that's fine. But how do you then go back and look at those dudes in the locker room and say, you know, follow my lead? That's my take on it.
Yeah, I don't agree. I have to say, I think these guys know their bodies so well. Mm-hmm. And against South Africa, okay, he tried it and he looked good at times, but that's South Africa. He's not up against Hakimi on the left-hand side. Fonzie at 70%, who hasn't got that pace, would have been eaten alive, I think, by Hakimi. And I think he knows that. That's the reason why I think he made that choice. I get it optically. When the coach says he passed the MRI, I would have been fine with him starting, as opposed to in the past in the World Cup saying, we had to protect the player. I had to protect the player. He was putting himself in danger. I get that angle. That could be questioned for sure, Dubs. But as far as Fonzie, you know, being break through the coals right now by a lot of people, I think it might be a little bit unfair. No one knows his body like he does. And I'm sure he would have given everything had he felt he was able to. That's my personal, subjective opinion.
Yeah, I think it's bullshit. There's a lot of really terrible takes out there. No, the takes on Alfonso and Arash. I think yours is very hot take-ish and terrible, quite frankly. Like he has the armband. He has a place in this roster, and he always would have, even if he was never
place on the roster for sure.
Yeah. Well, your tweet yesterday was: is this what it was going to be? Why was Alfonso Davies on the roster?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, I just mean moving forward.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, moving forward, to me, he can't be your captain, but go ahead, Amy. Oh.
Yeah. So Alfonso Davies, to that point, showed up and played for Canada when nobody was paying attention, you were playing on crap pitches, the way that it was when I played for the national team. You were doing it for the badge. You're doing it for your country, for the pride that goes with that, not for the adulation, not for the articles, not for the engagement and not to push a personal brand. He was showing up long before that. And I played with a high hamstring injury, thinking qualifications, World Cup qualifications in 2006. And it was a nightmare. And I wasn't this pacey, dynamic, explosive player on the wing where I was like really nervous about going into fifth gear. I was a ball-winning midfielder who was running at, you know, you still have to change direction and change speeds and then hit your top speed, but it's a little bit more predictable. And it was a bloody nightmare because you don't trust yourself. And every time you do something that's a little bit reactive, you're in your head, you're worried about it going. And this is a guy who hadn't been with the team in 15 months, who'd done his ACL, had three recurrent hamstring injuries, and he's trying to get back fit, plays to great effect and to great impact versus South Africa. I mean, all the decoy and all the BS around it, and I didn't agree with it. I thought it was a misstep by Marsh to try to shiny object and the gamesmanship and all the jockeying around that. I thought it was a distraction. But there was a certain amount of payoff for it, for Alphonso Davies coming on for those 15 minutes and tilting the field towards the left to open it up on the right and eventually Eustáquio's goal. But maybe that was a little bit too much, and he felt, you know, maybe testing, pushing the limit a little bit too much, and then warming up. Maybe he was available. He was ready to go, but then felt something. I empathize with him as the player in that position, wanting desperately to be there for your team, more than just a voice, more than just a presence, but something tangible on the pitch, and having that taken away from you by your own body that's betraying you. It's a terrible feeling. So I have nothing but empathy for the guy. And like all of these, the questions about him and his character and wearing the armband, I think it has no place.
Yeah.
Jamie, I agree with, just one sec, Jamie. I agree with almost everything you say there, except one thing.
Yeah.
To rewind the clock of what he did 5, 6, and 7 years ago, to me, has no bearing on today. Because athletes change when you get paid. Athletes change when you get notoriety. Athletes change when you become stars. There's an old adage, be careful what happens when you give the guy the bag and what they're going to turn into. Antonio Brown of the Steelers was just an amazing teammate, an amazing player, whatever. They gave him the money, and that dude went out of his mind. And people change when the adulation comes, when the money comes, your priorities change, etc. So yes, Alphonso did all those things in 2019 and 2020 and 2021 and prior to that. But I do not believe that has any impact on today. Everything else you said, bang on, fair, etc. I just push back on that point because it's a different dude today who's on every single commercial, God bless him, than the kid who is sitting in front of the FIFA Congress pleading for the World Cup to come to Canada. Sorry, Jamie, I interrupted
you. No. That's okay, good point. But let me ask you this. You're Alphonso Davies. You've had plenty of injuries, okay? You come on in the match for 15 minutes. In my opinion, he showed leadership. The way that he was talking, organizing, dictating. His body's not right. Now, if I'm him, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm looking going, if I push myself and I get injured again, I'm in trouble here. Bayern Munich just spent $50 million on a left back. I need to compete. I need to fight for my spot. So do I go out and risk everything and be out for another 3 months when they've just bought a left back? Or do I say, I'm going to protect myself right now? Because my bread and butter is at Bayern Munich. That's my bread and butter. That's where I get paid.
Business decision.
No, it is a football decision. That's your bread and butter. This is your livelihood. This is your job. This is what you do. You're an entertainer. You're a footballer. So your decision is not business. It's looking after yourself to make sure that I can perform week in and week out at my club that pays my wages every single week and not lying on a treatment table for the next 2 months because I've pushed myself trying to appease people that go, oh, you should be playing. And then if he goes out there and he tears his hamstring and he's out again, people go, oh, well, at least he tried it. No, bullshit. You're a player. You look after yourself just like everybody else does with their job. You look after number one. You have to.
So are we expecting too much of international athletes to care about the crest on their heart, that maple leaf, playing for your country? Are we putting too much on them? That's more important. You should be prepared to sacrifice your career in a round of 16 match as opposed to your club career.
You can't. Playing for your country is a privilege. Everybody wants to put on that jersey and represent your country. But if you're not right, why am I pushing myself just to make everybody else happy? And then if I get injured, nobody cares. Everybody's going to continue on with their life in their day-to-day. I'm the one that's going to be sitting on that treatment table for the next 2 months, 3 months. And then I've got to get fit. And then I got to go fight for my job to get back into a lineup.
So, Jimmy, here's a question for you. If this was a Champions League quarterfinal, semifinal, and Alfonso was in the exact same spot, does he sit?
Yep.
100%.
Okay.
100%. You can't. Because I've been in that situation where I've got injured. I pushed myself, got injured again. Clubs went out and bought another player. And in my head, it's spinning now because I'm going, they've just got another quality player. I've got to fight now even harder to get back into my job. And at the end of the day, my wages come from that club. They don't come from Canada. They don't come from anywhere else. They come from there. So you have to look after yourself because nobody else is going to look after yourself in football. I'll tell you that for free. Nobody looks after you. You play, and if you walk away from the game, nobody gives a shit. So you, as a player, have to look after number one.
If I think it's a very fascinating, honest take from a professional. That's the truth. Dubs.
It's the truth.
If I could just add to that, because Jimmy initially framed it as showing good leadership. And I would say that in that instance, he's putting his ego aside and he's saying me at 70% or less, because let's be honest, that's what he looked like, even though he was used and he was impactful versus South Africa. He wasn't even close to 100% Alfonso Davies. So he feels something, you know, we don't know about the discussion before that. And he's like, listen, me at whatever percentage I am right here, I am going to risk injury and I'm also not going to help the team. So that to me is a mature decision and a very, very difficult one. And then the last point I want to make is I've had high ankle sprains. I've had knee injuries, blew out my knee. I've also had the muscle injuries. Pushing through, getting a cortisone shot, taking pain meds and doing everything for your country is not the same on a muscle injury as it is for like a structural injury. Mm-hmm. You can play through pain, right? But you can't play through a hamstring. If there's a little, you feel something, you can't. So there's a difference here. It's really apples to oranges if we're talking about, you know, playing through pain and putting yourself on the line and putting everything out there for your country and for your teammates and leading by example that way. You just can't do that with a hamstring. You can't.
No. It's not a bone bruise or anything like that where you can get through the pain. It's when it's a muscle, it's completely different.
Yeah, Resh, remind me, because I forget. It's only a few months ago now, but when Sidney Crosby didn't play in the gold medal game, right? He picked up an injury in the, I think in the semi-final, right? Mm-hmm. Was there a kickback from the fans?
Oh, God, no, of course not, Sharon.
Is it Sidney, right?
Well, not just that, because Sidney Crosby went to the coaches the day before the gold medal game and said, you sit me and you play someone else. I'm sacrificing my spot for the country. And suddenly they were going to, you know, build schools and name them after Sidney Crosby.
They already have.
Yeah, exactly.
So why doesn't Fonzie get the martyr treatment?
Hockey.
Well, but I'm not saying that. I think it was insane what with the narrative that was going on in Milano in February.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I heard the sarcasm. I heard it. Yeah.
What do we, I just have a question for all of you. Like, what was this a success? Like, this whole for Canada?
Yeah.
No, I think, we went into a little bit and we'll be doing it for the next little while. I think it was. I mean, I know Craig likes to mention the rankings of the teams that Canada beat or had to play. I like to remind people that we're still Canada. We're still very much in our infancy. We're growing and there'll become a time when you expect them to start winning games against teams in the top 15. Sure, but we're not there yet. You might do it on the perfect day when, listen, Morocco had an off day. Let's be honest. All right. And Canada played them tough. if Morocco was on their game in that first half looks very different. Simple as that. Now, did Canada cause that? Perhaps. But I think overall, we talked about it before the World Cup. What was the goal? You know, the goal was to start moving in the right direction, get a win, score some more goals, get out the group. Done, 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 done. I don't care who you're playing. We're Canada. We're not. I was going to say, let's go Brazil there for some reason. We're not Brazil. Yeah. Thank Christ.
We did the same as Brazil. Yeah. We didn't score more goals. We scored more goals than before, but
yeah.
One against Bosnia, one against Switzerland, one against South Africa.
Yeah.
I'm just 11 versus 9.
Let's not dismiss the Qatar game, a game that they had to win. And of course, they should have won. And we could talk about that game for an hour.
To me, it was a met expectations World Cup. It wasn't below expectations. It didn't exceed expectations. It's like any performance review I've ever had.
I think, honestly, Arash, I think we elevate it because of what happened outside of Canada. You know, the team itself, the occasion, how Canada, the country, embraced the World Cup. Toronto, Vancouver. If you wrap it all into a nice little neat package, on the pitch and then everything else, it was a massive success. From a footballing standpoint, yeah, okay. Met expectations. That's probably.
I think these are two totally different things, though.
Yeah, but they're not, though, right? They're wrapped into one, though, when you hear the general dialogue about this World Cup.
Yeah.
I think the emotions get involved, right? Oh, it was an amazing, what an experience.
Sure. Well, vibes count, right? Vibes are a way to open doors and create investment, development. All of a sudden, there's more media about it. So, you know, you have to look at it as a whole instead of, just on the pitch. Now, obviously on the pitch, it'll be one thing for the coaches, for breaking it down, strategizing, analytical, all of those things. But we have to look at it as what was the, now we can talk, we'll talk about this on other shows too, was, did it pay off? Was the investment worth it? All of those things are due, but I want, before we jump out, we got 2.5 minutes. Balogun, FIFA. Thank you. We literally have to. Sharms, you give the layout. We'll get these.
No,
guys
I want Arash. I'll get to it all week. We'll talk about this all week. But Arash, I want your thoughts on this and how bad does FIFA look? Or are you just? Did the FIFA reach their expectations?
FIFA exceeded expectations here. Just when I thought the Peace Prize wasn't a big enough fiasco, they went out and what was the Jim Carrey, Jeff Daniels line, totally redeemed themselves. we're just making it up as we go along. You're effectively saying you're the WWE and VAR, and afterwards is a way we can just fix results. Okay, cool. That's what it is.
The precedent it sets is terrifying.
Yep.
Yeah. What a great president, though, to do that and help out his team. What a guy.
He cares about the game, right?
He cares.
What about this? What if it was a Belgian player who got the red and FIFA reversed it for Belgium facing the United States? Then what would all the MAGA and Fox News pundits have to say today?
It's a black mark. I don't follow this enough to think it's crazy that they did this.
If you jump on Twitter right now, this to me exemplifies the innate insanity of this. Go onto Twitter, jump on Sepp Blatter's account, and Sepp Blatter has become the voice of reason.
Yeah. I have so many people saying to me, this is the worst president in the history of FIFA. I'm thinking, wait a minute. It wasn't too many years ago Sepp Blatter was running this show. It's incredible. Sepp's become a must follow. That's terrifying.
No, it calls the integrity of the game in question. Like it really does. Like it's a real blight.
I mean, they've now got a government involved in football, which traditionally speaking, they suspend you for, right? There's no black or white there. It's like, no, you're suspended. Your government's involved. And now they got involved with the highest authority in the game in FIFA. It looks so optically horrendous. It is horrendous. And what it means moving forward, you know, well, we'll see. We're out of time. We'll be delving into this again when Balogun scores a hat trick. God. In the next match. I mean, my God. Listen, we're out of time. For Arash, thank you so much, mate. That was fun. We'll bring you back on. It's been some World Cup, and we've got some scandal and controversy now, and some opinions, which we love and we always encourage. Make sure you like us, subscribe to us, leave us comments about. I think there might be some comments after today's show, quite possible. We'll look at those tomorrow. Yeah. And follow us on Patreon. Pay the $3 a month. It's pretty good. All right. Until next time, everyone. Cheers very much for listening, and BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Legendary. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Legendary.
Why?
Why? Because it sounds cool.
Yes. Legendary.
Thank you, Arash, for coming on, brother.
Thanks,
guys.
That was great.
You got it, guys.
That was good.
You got it.